Welcome back to the Friday edition of Off the Hour, your source of daily corporate free news. I'm your host, Carla, here as always, and we're going to start the show off with Heaven's Only Wishful by More More.
I'm just a poor boy.
And that was Heaven's Only Wishful by More More. You are listening to CKUT 90.3, and this is Off the Hour Friday. As always, I am your host, Carla, and I am joined by a very special guest, my good friend from high school, Leanna.
Hello.
Leanna, how are you doing?
I'm good.
You're good? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So are you ready to get into the news, or do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
No, I will not introduce myself. I'm just a very old friend, and yeah, that's about it. I've known Kawe for maybe more than 5 years.
Yeah.
Yep. Good friends since high school.
No, we did not share a locker in CJAP.
No, we did not.
We did not, but you took over my locker that I shared with someone else. Anyways, we're going to get into the news since this is a news-centered show. So our first news story of the week, new police recruits to spend more time in community, Montreal police chief says. So new recruits to the Service de Police de la Ville de Montréal will get 4 weeks of immersion training to help them build connections with communities in which they will be working with before patrolling the city's street. The training, which is similar to the program that Thagger, who FYI is the new police chief, he was sworn in this January. He championed this while he was the chief of the Longueuil Police Service, and it's part of his efforts to better connect police officers to communities in which they work. Currently, only 10 to 15% of officers of the PVM live in Montreal, which I ridiculous. Yeah, I can see the look on your face. I was also shocked when I saw that. I was like, I thought it would be at least 50%.
Well, yes. I mean, if you're going to work in Montreal, might as well live in Montreal.
And I understand if, say, like, you live in Longueuil or you live in Laval because, you know, either you need more space or, I don't know, like, you can't afford rent here because, like, let's be honest, like, rent is getting more expensive.
The market here is horrible.
Yeah. I realized I copy-pasted this thing twice. It's okay. But back in January, when Dagger was sworn in, he stated that officers must understand the reality of their community and the issues people face, like mental illness and precarious living. In 2023, the population must also understand the difficulty and reality of policing. People have lost trust in the police after incidents like the killing of George Floyd by police officers in the United States. Mm-hmm. And now police must rebuild links with the population while addressing racial profiling. Racial profiling is not just a police problem. It's a problem from all of society. And police is only one part of a bigger puzzle, discrimination in all forms. That's what the police chief said. I have to say, I was really shocked with that 10 to 15% number because I thought it would be higher. But basically, police officers are getting a raise of 20% that should be spread out over the next 5 years of a salary increase. That's what came to for their new collective bargaining agreement. And, like, listen, if they're not going to abolish the police, which, like, it looks like they're not going to be doing.
I don't think you can actually abolish the police. It's a big step.
And, like, in an ideal world, I think, like, we would be able to do it. But, like, being realistic, I don't think it's possible. But I think, like, the first step of, like, reform is getting people in touch with the communities in which they serve.
Definitely.
Because often you see it's a problem when you don't live with the people with who... I think it's especially more pronounced in the States, but I think you see it here too. When you're not, like, living day to day with the people who you serve, there's kind of a disconnect.
I mean, maybe they need to be a little disconnected to be able to do their job also, right?
I mean,
police officers, they're out there saving people, risking their lives on the daily. And I think that if you actually want to do your job correctly, you need to kind of build that distance like that. You're not too...
But at the same time, you do need to build the rapport with the people so that you don't treat them as if they're, like, strangers, because your job is to serve and protect, and there's the serve part of it, you know, like... And, you know, if, say, someone is having, like, a mental health crisis at, like, a grocery store, if, say, like, you, I don't know, you've encountered the person multiple times and you know, okay, they're not a danger, they're more of a danger to myself than they are to me, it's easier to, you know, help the person. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like, mental health services should not be provided for by the police.
I would not want that to happen.
Yeah, no, you want, you know, actual medical trained mental health professionals to take care of that. But, you know, when you have people who, you know, work day to day in the communities, it's better links, and, like, you're gonna trust them more. Mm-hmm. Ultimately.
But maybe they don't actually go, like, through schooling in their police academia.
Yeah, which is in Joliette.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, it's in Joliette. It's in Joliette.
So it's not even in Montreal. So maybe, like, that's... They have, like, this kind of disconnection between what they know in Joliette and what they learned there compared to how it is in Montreal. I mean, there's so many cultures here. People react so many different ways, right? You turn on your left, you see this, and after you turn on your right, you see something else. They should actually be here and understand how Montreal works.
Yeah. And I know that the police have been trying to make a bigger push to have more diversity within their ranks. And I mean, also, if you're good, like, a problem is when you have, say, people who have lived in, say, I don't want to say the countryside, like, derogatorily, like, and be like, the countryside, but, you know, like, if you live in a town that's, you know, in the countryside, and then all of a sudden you move to a big city where you're working with this you and I were both raised in cities, so we know how cities are. Listen, we're used to seeing, I don't know, all kinds of people in the metro, mm-hmm. and it's normal for us.
It's normal for us. It's like New York.
Yeah, it's like New York. You know, you're going to see weird stuff. You're going to see people behaving weirdly, but mm-hmm. you move on with your day. But if it's like your first time and you're dealing with all this newness, it could feel threatening when it's not really. It's just a matter of getting used to it. So, I mean, I'm all in favor. I think that it should be longer than 4 weeks, honestly.
And definitely. I think it should be incorporated with their schooling. Like, they should do stages with the people, the communities, and understand how they work.
I don't know how the police haven't figured out a way to, like, get housing for their police office. Like, I don't know. Work with like an agency to help them be like find rent or find like an apartment if they want to live in the city. I feel like they should encourage people to live in the city or live in like the suburbs nearby.
But then you should like increase the salary, because being a police officer is a lot.
Yeah, it
so,
is
like,
a
if
lot.
If you actually want them to live in Montreal and after serve Montreal, you should increase the salary and like compensate them for everything they're going to do.
Yeah. We're sounding very pro-police. Which I like to say, we're not really. I mean, like I understand why it exists. I'm not like super, like, I'm not cheering on the cops, but you know.
I think it's just fear, especially knowing like what's happening down south, right? Yeah. I wouldn't want that to happen.
And it happens here too.
Exactly, but like not on the same scale.
Not on the same scale, but it's still it happens, racial profiling still happens. Definitely. And so it's something to be mindful of, but I feel like it's a good first step.
I mean, listen, baby steps, right?
Baby steps.
But tiny, tiny baby steps.
Baby steps. But, you know, I think it's a good first step if you're going to try to mend the relationship between the public and the police.
It's going
to
take years, though.
It's going to take a long time. But, I mean, I think so far the police chief, he's saying the right things.
Is he going to act on it?
That's the big thing. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Montreal Pride launches rebrand, says its confident parade will go on as planned this year. Which, fun fact, this is the first line of the article from which I got the headline. Montreal Pride is doing everything to avoid a last music cancellation of the city. Oh, no, this is not the right one. But basically, it was really funny. It was like, oh, hopefully they're not going to cancel it again.
You know, I wasn't aware that last year was canceled at all.
You didn't hear about it?
No.
Wow.
I stay in my bubble.
Yeah, because I sent you the news story and you were like, oh, they canceled it last year? And I'm like, yeah, didn't you hear? It was a big thing. So basically last year they had to cancel the Montreal Pride Parade, which is really sad because a lot of people were looking forward to it because mm-hmm. it was the first one since COVID. So people were really wanting to come back to celebrate, to, you know, march together because it's a big thing, the Montreal Pride Parade. And then they had to cancel last minute because they didn't have enough volunteers, which, listen, it makes sense. You don't want anything to happen mm-hmm. to people. If it was better to cancel than to go on and for something horrible to happen.
Definitely. So I understood. Security-wise also,
especially since especially this year, since there have been an increase of hostile, like, public discourse about LGBTQ communities, especially trans people, especially drag queens.
Yes, yes. I've heard about that, though.
Yeah, and so you don't want any, like, extremists or someone like that showing up, because listen, it's supposed to be a day of celebration. It's supposed to be a day of pride. It's supposed to be a day of people coming together.
Mm-hmm. And accepting each other for who we are and who we love. But now that it's coming back, I'm actually looking forward to it, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. People are going to come back to life. It's part of our community, right?
Yeah.
You have to admit it, like LGBTQ is, it's part of who we're supposed to accept, who we like.
Yeah.
I mean, my brother could be one, my sister could be one, and it shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of change. Having to change people's mind regarding the subject is like so within them. They're born that way. They learn to hate. Well, maybe not hate, but, you know, like
to be hostile.
Exactly. You know, some people are like, it's unnatural. It's not the way it's supposed to be. And they throw in religion, but these are their personal lives. They're not affecting you.
Yeah.
And you should just be happy for them, right?
Yeah.
If you're happy, I'm happy.
Yeah. So Thursday, the nonprofit, which is Fierté Montréal, launched a flashy new website and logo, saying it had restructured the organization and hired a team of 200 people with major event planning experience to handle this year's parade, which will take place on August 13. Last year, on the morning of August, the parade was scheduled to unfold with more than 12,000 participants.
That's a lot.
Yeah, because I was going to 12,000, 1,200, 12,000.
12,000.
Participants along several kilometers of the city's busy boulevard, and the head of Fierté Montréal, when he arrived to the room where personnel are supposed to get ready, he found it basically empty, and so he had to make the call to cancel. But yeah, I'm really happy that it's going on. It's a great event. I think it's also like, it's kind of like a cornerstone event in my mind of like Montreal. When I think of like events here, you know, the Javis Festival, Francophonie, Montréal en Lumière, and like the Pride Festival is one of them.
Isn't there another one?
The winter one.
Yes, the winter one.
The winter one whose name I forgot because I've never been.
Me neither.
Yeah, but I'm really happy. I hope that it goes off without a hitch. I saw that they kept all the core members of the organization, so there wasn't like a reshuffling.
Good.
I don't think it was like anyone's part. I don't know. Because part of me is like, how do you like not realize that you have enough volunteers? That's the thing for me.
Maybe management, maybe they just expected so many people to come after COVID. And people are like, listen, maybe it's not safe. Maybe we just don't have the time. After COVID was quite hectic for everyone. Jobs were starting again. You had to go back to the office. People didn't want to work. I think we also had a bunch of heat waves during that year. So I think it's really management. They just forgot to check on how many volunteers they're going to get.
Yeah. and also like, after like probably like 3 years of not having one, all of a sudden having, and who knows, maybe people in the organization left who were in charge of that. So
funds. This is a public thing. They need funds. And like after 3 years, everything's dried up. There's no more money.
Yeah. But honestly, I hope that the event goes out without a hitch. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to be here. I might go on vacation, but like if I'm here, I'm going to try to go. I always wanted to go to a Pride parade.
Yeah.
It's on Sunday.
Oh
yes, it's always caused me problems, but honestly I really hope to go one day because it looks like fun. It looks like people are so warm and inviting. That's one thing I really love about the LGBTQ community in Montreal. They are just so warm, so invited, and they like really deserve to have like their day of celebration and of being together, and especially after like 3 years of not seeing everyone. Definitely. So yeah, Montreal Pride Parade, hopefully we'll get to attend, but we'll see. So we're gonna take a quick break. This is going to be Cheers to New Beginning by Dominique Fissimé.
Is it better or worse than before? Yeah, things are not the same anymore. Was it all meant to fall down? Was it all bound to break down? Singing.
And that was Cheers to New Beginnings by Dominique Fissime. Liana, you really love that song.
I like jazz and I like minor keys. So this was like amazing.
Yeah. So we're back to the news. This is Friday off the hour Friday. I keep making that mistake for some reason because I want to say, oh, this is the Friday edition of Off the Hour. And then I'm like, oh, no, this is Off the Hour Friday. And I just get those two mixed up. And so this is Off the Hour Friday. You're listening to CKUT 90.3. And this is your source of daily news. I'm your host, Carla, joined by my good friend, Liana.
Yeah. Oh, hello again.
Okay, so our next headline, Canada's Competition Bureau sues Cineplex for allegedly advertising misleading ticket prices. Have you heard of this?
Yes. I was maybe one of the customers who are never going to consider going back to Cineplex. I was like, really? I'm going to be a Gutsu fan until I die. Oh, wow. Well, listen, I don't want to pay more to watch a movie because I bought the tickets online. I do everything online nowadays, so.
Yeah. So the Competition Bureau, which is a Canadian, it's a federal thing, says it's suing Cineplex because basically they were breaking the law because they added a $1.50 booking fee online for when you would buy tickets. Mm-hmm. So if, say, you were buying tickets on Tuesday when tickets are half off, which they're $6.
I think seven.
Yeah. So they would be $7 if you would show up to buy them, you know, in person. But basically, if you bought them online, Cineplex would charge you an extra $150 as a booking fee, which I don't know what the booking... What is the fee going towards? That's my question.
Who knows?
Basically, the Bureau finds that in an investigation, consumers can't buy tickets online at advertised prices because there's the additional $1.50 booking fee. This is an example of misleading drip pricing, also known as a junk fee. The Bureau notes that recent amendments to the Competition Act explicitly recognize drip pricing as a harmful business practice, and it says that any additional fixed charges or fees are false or misleading under the law unless they are imposed by the government, such as a sales tax, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay, my question. Yes. If they're doing this to Cineplex, why don't they do this to Uber?
I don't know. Well, Uber is only online, right? You can't really book an Uber if you don't book through the
Especially
app.
Uber Eats, because now you have to pay a lot of fees.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, there's like a service fee.
I'm not a fellow Uber Eats person.
Okay, so like you have, I don't know, I don't like how now if you buy stuff online, you have to pay these. If it's not shipping.
Don't get me started about shipping.
If it's not shipping, I don't understand why you have to, because like shipping, I understand. It costs you money, mm-hmm. especially if you're like a small business owner. It costs you money to, you know, pack the good and send it to me, especially if you're like a Canadian small business and you have to deal with like Canada Post rates, which are like really high and not that great for small businesses. Yeah. I get it that you're like, you know what? I'm going to give you a $5 shipping fee. I get that. I'm willing to pay that. But for a ticket that is going to be transmitted to you electronically?
I don't understand. I mean, there's no staff required to give you the ticket, you buy it by yourself, and then you need to show up there by yourself. The only thing they're going to do is scan in and have to tell you which room to go to. And it was quite annoying because I remember they were like, we're going to charge you amount of money if you come here before the movie, so like to watch the prequels. And I'm a prequel fan, I love them. That's mostly, I think, the most important reason why I go to movies, like to see like the trailers.
Yeah.
And so when that happened, I was like, I'm never going back to see the Flex, I'm going to go to Guzzo. Because, you know, good old Guzzo never failed me, never let me down. It's always there. The popcorn is great. I think it's, I wouldn't consider that as fraud, but maybe they're like planning on getting some more money to do like some activity, right? They had like a lot of things going on with the $3 tickets also.
Yeah.
So I can't be mad at them because, yeah, sure, you increase it by $150, but then you give me like a full day where I could go to the movies for $3. I'm not mad. But then again, I would rather buy my tickets on place.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why also cancellation, right?
Yeah.
Right. People buy online and they're like, okay, like if you're going to show up, well, you're going to
have to. But here's the thing though, if you buy the ticket online, whether you show up or not, they still got your money.
But they don't get the popcorn money.
They don't get the popcorn money, but still like you are able to sell, like exactly. The studio still gets their money. The actors still get their money. Like the cinema still gets the money. Like the only thing you're really missing out is people buying stuff at the concession stand, really. Mm-hmm. I have not been to the, when's the last time I went to a movie theater? The last time I went to a movie theater was on March break.
Oh, wow. That's been a long time ago. Okay.
This March?
Yeah.
A long time ago? Really?
Well, I go to movies maybe like once a month.
Okay.
That's why.
Okay, you go more. I've made it a resolution to go to the movies more often, but no, I went in March, and it was like a little, an indie cinema, Cinema du Parc, which is like not that far mm-hmm. away from here, that like shows indie movies, because mm-hmm. I wanted to be different and watch an indie movie, and they were like, and also like the only thing playing at Cineplex was like Avatar, and I'm like, I don't want to watch Avatar.
What, you didn't watch Avatar?
I didn't watch Avatar.
Oh, that's another debate for another time, okay.
It's too long. It's 3 hours.
What do you mean? It's great. It's 3 hours.
No, but here's the thing. It's 3 hours, and I had seen the first one, but I didn't want to rewatch it so that I understood what was happening. And I remember when I watched the first one, I didn't really, beyond the 3D, there was nothing really appealing to me about the world of.
I can't spoil anything, right?
James I don't Cameron. Care. I don't care.
Not for you, for the listeners.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I really didn't care enough. I'm sorry. The last like movie I saw in a Cineplex properly was Top Gun.
Oh, okay.
Top Gun Maverick. I went to see it with my friend Anthony. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't buy my tickets online because I knew about that $1.50 booking fee. I'm like, no, I'm going in person. I'm buying my tickets. I didn't buy popcorn.
At this point, yeah, I understand. Popcorn is so expensive. But, I mean, even if you buy your tickets at the cinema, it comes back to the same thing. You have to buy your tickets yourself. There's no one at this. Like, there's no desk where you can buy your tickets. You're doing it, like, on a little machine. You go beep, boop, 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 and that's it.
Yeah, and the ticket prints out by itself. And, you know, when I went to the theater last time, I had to print my own tickets. Like, they sent me, you know, they, like, sent it to me by email. Mm-hmm. I got the PDF file. I printed it. I showed up. They scanned the ticket.
And that's it.
Yeah. And so it's like, imagine if that experience, I had to pay a $150 booking fee. It's like, what is the fee going towards? Because I'm printing the ticket myself.
It's like charging someone at Max, your like Dollarama for self-checkout.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I'm putting stuff in my bag by myself. You're not scanning anything. So why? I couldn't tell you. We should ask them.
Personally. Yeah. And I really hate that because I feel like things like that is going to discourage people from going to the movies mm-hmm. when like the cinema is like really suffering, especially indie movies.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff now just goes direct to streaming, but it's so different from like going to a movie theater.
Definitely.
Yeah. Like when I went back to the movies, I remember like just liking the experience of like for 2 hours, there's no distractions. I'm not distracted by like my phone or someone talking to me. I just have like my full attention to a movie, and I forgot how much I love that. And like part of that is that tickets nowadays are really expensive.
Yes, they are. I think they like around $14, right?
That's yeah.
I remember last time I went to, well, not last time, but like there was one time I went to movies and the experience was so great. I think it was Marvel's, the last one, Endgame.
Yeah.
And the whole theater was screaming and clapping and cheering on characters who make like, they're fictional. They don't even exist. Yeah. But, like, it was such a fun experience. And nowadays, I mean, I have to admit, it's streaming devices, right? I have some myself. I have Disney, I have Netflix. If I know the movie's going to come out on Disney in like a week, I'm not going to go to the movies to experience like the whole big screen and, you know, the whole shebangs. I'll rather just watch it at home. And like increasing the prices is not going to help.
Yeah.
Well, incite people to come over and watch movies and like build this whole community, right?
Yeah.
I know people who go to the movies like every week.
I also have friends who go to movies every week because they love cinema. It. Yeah.
But with the prices, right? I can't.
Especially since we're in recession now. So, you know, like.
I can't afford anything.
Yeah. And usually the first thing to go when you're in a recession is like all the, you know.
Essential stuff.
Yeah. All the like stuff that's like non-essential. So, you know, going to the movies. Mm-hmm. If, say, you had to like buy new clothes, but that could wait. Going to, you know, eating out at a restaurant, that can wait, you know. It's really sad because I remember when I went to go see the movie, I went on March break, I went to see Women Talking. I talked about it on this show, actually. Not this show, but I talked about it on Voices of Montreal. When I went to see the movie, I think we were maybe 20 people in the theater, like in the theater. And I was the youngest person there by a good 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And that made me kind of sad.
What time did you watch it?
I went to see it on a Tuesday, even. I went to see it Tuesday, middle of the day, and it was spring break.
Oh, okay.
And it was like Cinema du Parc, and I'm like, okay, I get it. This is an indie movie, so maybe not that many people are rushing to go watch a movie about like women in a Mennonite community. I get it. It's very niche, but like that kind of made me sad, the idea that like people are now in, and like the pricing thing doesn't help. Do you remember when MoviePass was a thing?
MoviePass.
So there used to be this company, I think it, I forgot what the company was, but basically they had this thing where you could buy a card. Mm-hmm. I forgot how much it was, but if you bought that card, you could watch movies unlimited.
Oh, wow. No, does it still exist?
It does not exist anymore, because what they thought is, okay, well, the normal average everyday person is going to buy this. The type of person who goes to the movies maybe once a month, once every 2 months. What they didn't account for is that people who are cinephiles, who love going to the movies, who, if they could, they would go every day. Those were the people buying the movie pass, and they were going to see, like, movies maybe, like, 10 times a month.
Oh, wow.
So they were actively losing money, so they had to, like, stop movie pass, and I'm so sad. They never had it in Canada. It was a U.S. thing.
Oh, wow.
It was for AMC theaters, and we don't have AMC theaters here. We only have Guzzo, Cineplex, and, like, independent movie cinemas. But yeah, no, I'm so pissed that, like, movie pass never existed here.
No, never.
I feel like movie pass would do well, you know,
here.
Yeah, if you gave people, if you're like, oh hey, if you pay $20 a month, you get to see three movies.
Doesn't it already exist? I'm sure there's like some,
I'm sure it probably
Prime
exists
account with like Cineplex.
But yeah, I hope that people do a civil lawsuit, honestly. I hope that there's a class action so that people get their money back, because stealing from people is never okay, especially when Definitely. You like charge them a $150 like booking fee
for self-checkout. Makes no sense
for self-checkout. And I know it's very minimal, like $150, but like in the grand scheme of things, if you're a person who goes to see the movie regularly, or say you went with a group of 10 people, that's a lot of money to be scamming people out of, and it really doesn't build you good trust with the community.
Like schools, right?
Yeah.
Elementary schools, they always go to the movie. Like,
yeah, imagine like you had an elementary school group and they bought, that made me more mad. We're gonna move on.
Okay.
Because like I feel like we could talk about this all day.
Definitely very frustrated.
Yeah. So next news story, this is in my wheelhouse because I'm a poli sci major. Manon Massé to step down as Québec Solidaire co-spokesperson. I cannot speak today. 6 years after becoming the co-spokesperson for Québec Solidaire, Manon Massé is preparing to pass the torch. At an emotional conference Tuesday, Massé took the podium amid a roar of applause and announced that she would not seek another term as the party's co-spokesperson. She said, "In life, you have to decide, you have to know how to listen to yourself. So I decided to listen to my heart. My heart told me that I gave what I had to give as spokesperson for Québec Solidaire. Every day I met people who have distress in their eyes. I meet people who have lost their homes, seniors who have been kicked out in the name of making more cash by their owners, people who have sometimes skipped meals in a single day. These people need me." Basically, she's saying that she's basically reneging the position so that she can spend more time focusing on her constituents, which like makes sense, honestly. Manon Massé is a noted feminist and social activist. She was named co-spokesperson for Québec Solidaire in 2017. She brought issues such as climate change, green transition, and Indigenous affairs to the National Assembly. She was the party's first candidate upon its founding in 2006, but she was not elected until 2014. And she has done a lot of work for the LGBTQ plus community. She herself is a member of the LGBTQ plus community. One thing I would really like to note, and I think a lot of, do you know what political polarization is?
So, no, I don't. I'm giving big eyes. I don't know what you're talking about.
So political polarization, it's not a theory. It's an actual thing. It's that through time, people are going more and more towards the extreme. So you have people on the like far left and people on the far right, and you're starting to have a lot less people who are like in the middle. That's not to say that people on the far left are like communists and fascists, but like you're seeing to see more of like a divide in politics. And one thing I really liked was that, I'm not the biggest fan of François Legault, but François Legault did tweet his congratulations at her.
Oh,
and thanked her for her service. And I think one thing I kind of appreciate, at least in this province, I know that we have a lot of disagreements, especially online, but I appreciate the fact that the politicians, they still like respect each other on like a personal level. Because I feel like Definitely. When you stop respecting yourself in a personal level, that's when you get the type of stuff you get in the U.S. where it's just like...
Exactly. It's like attacking the other one, right? Personal attack.
Personal attack.
You're not supposed to do that.
You're not supposed to do that. And like, I kind of understand when it's like the other person's position is like invalidating the existence and the rights of other people that I get. I'm happy that we're not at that point yet in politics. It's going to happen at some point. So? I mean,
right. I'm things a repeat. In politics, so I don't know what's happening. Yeah. Tell me.
So a lot of what happens in the U.S. has an effect on what happens in the rest of the Western world.
Definitely.
There are key differences, but stuff that happens internationally tends to happen in Canada. Like in the 30s, there was a Nazi party in Germany. There was a Nazi party in Canada. You don't hear about it, but it existed. It wasn't to the extent, but especially with social media nowadays, because people have access to a lot of like damaging stuff. But I appreciate the fact that people, at least here, from what I know, people, you can still have like a somewhat of a civil conversation about politics. I mean, it depends. I mean, listen, we still had the Ottawa rally, and that showed a lot of people's true colors. But, you know, you're still able to have like,
you know, keep it professional.
You can keep it professional. Exactly. And I feel like when you stop having that, that's when like things really go awry.
Like, you're not sworn nemesis, right? It's just, it's a job. It's a title. I understand like you want it as best as the other, but it's not really in your control. Like, the people are going to vote whether you like it or not. And like having to insult and like downgrade the other people and like dig up dirt on their past and everything. Yeah. It's not how any
Unless the dirt you're digging out on the past is illegal activity, then yes, dig up dirt on their past because people deserve to know.
Oh boy,
yeah,
kind of. I will let that slide.
Yeah, because you know, if say your M&A did fraud, I would like to know about that before I vote for them. You know, but also one thing I really love, I met Manon Massé. Yeah, I did. I did a march back in 2017, 2018, and she was there. It was like one of my last years of high school.
Yeah,
she was really nice. It was a lot of like young people. We were marching for climate change, and she was there, and she was like really encouraging. And then when I went to the National Assembly back in 2020, right before COVID, I went in January, she was there, and she was really encouraging us to like get into politics. And that's one thing I really love about Manon Massé. She's always encouraging, especially people who are like underrepresented, so you know, women, people of color, members of the LGBT community. She's always encouraging us to, you know, go into politics and to fight for what, you know,
I mean, like, you represent us, right?
Yeah.
So you have no choice. Well, not no choice, but yeah, we're going to encourage you to do something for us to be our voices.
And especially what I love about Manon Massé is a lot of politicians, they have a lot of difficulty knowing when to let go, like knowing when it's your time to leave.
We'll say no names here.
Well, we won't say names, but I will say a name. I know this is a very like Montreal-centered show, Quebec-centered show, but in the U.S., the U.S. Senate, you have a senator from California, Dianne Feinstein. She's in her 90s. She's in a wheelchair.
90s?
Yeah. Okay. She's about to turn 90. She's like 89. She's in a wheelchair. She had a lot of like medical incidents recently.
Oh, no.
She kind of has dementia, so she can't remember stuff really. Like in commissions, she would ask a question to a witness. The person would answer and she would re-ask the question.
Okay.
And I'm not saying this to be ageist, but at that point, I feel like it's kind of elder abuse to like keep her in a position, but she doesn't want to leave.
Oh.
And I think there's a lot of people who need to know when it's your time to pass the torch. Because that's when you get situations like, you know, do you know who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in the U.S.? She was a Supreme Court justice who basically for years people were telling her to resign so that under Obama, he could appoint a liberal justice, but she didn't. But then she died during the Trump administration.
Oh.
So he put in her place a conservative judge.
Oh, great.
Which that helped overturn Roe v. Wade.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I think there's something about like knowing when it's your time to go.
Definitely.
Something
about like being humble, right?
Being knowing humble. Like,
when your time is done.
Yeah, I remember.
And accept it. I know it's hard to accept.
Yeah.
Right?
It's hard to accept when your time is done. Mm-hmm. But I think at some point you have to realize that like,
let the new generation take over.
The future is moved. Like, it's hard to say, like, the future is coming and I'm not really a part of the future. It's really hard to admit it to yourself. But at some point, you have to say, you know, okay, my time here is done. I'm going to cheer people on from the sideline, or I'm going to take a role that's a lot more, like, executive.
Definitely.
It is hard.
Definitely. Like, I couldn't see myself doing it, right? You've been in politics for so many years. Like, you want to continue. You want to be part of the change. But at some point, you just need to know when to let go.
Yeah.
It's just like grieving.
Yeah, it's almost grieving. It is almost grieving. One quote I remember when I went to the National Assembly, I was on the journalism team. So we would write like a daily newspaper. And I remember I did this thing. It was called Between Two Caucuses, where we would like interview people about, you know, like their political aspirations and, you know, what they wanted to do with their lives. And I remember I was talking to this girl. I forgot her name. I feel so bad for forgetting her name, but it's been like 4 years at this point almost. But she basically, I asked her like, oh, well, you know, what to use the perfect politician? And she's like, it's someone who comes in with a mission. Like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to achieve. And once they achieve that, they leave because they have achieved their purpose. They have achieved their goal. And so they know that it's time to pass on the torch to someone else. And I found that really profound. And it kind of reminds me of what like Max Weber said a similar thing. He's a political theorist. Unless you take polytheory, you're not going to really encounter Max Weber in your life. But he said something similar. A good politician is someone who comes in with like a defined mission. And I feel like Manuel Massé is one of those politicians who came in with a defined mission.
Well, then do we have good politicians in Quebec, according to your definition of what a good politician is?
I think we do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any examples, any shout out to?
This is going to sound really weird, but like I feel like I want to say Dominique Anglade because she saw the writing on the wall, but at the same time, I won't get into it. Actually, no, I'm not going to get into it because I will get in trouble with some people. I will get in trouble, so I won't say what I'm about to say. And also, my thoughts are really nuanced on that, and I don't think I can give you like a really good like take on like a radio format. It's something I need to think about. I'm going to go with Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois, who's someone who went to our high school.
Yes, he did.
So we hear about him a lot. He is someone I think who has a clear, defined mission, especially since he got really launched into the political scene in 2012 during during the student protest. But I feel like he's someone who, like, from the get-go has had a vision for what Quebec should be, and he's fighting for that vision.
No, he is. I have to admit, he's quite persistent.
He's quite persistent. Someone that I don't agree with, Pierre Plamondon, who is the leader of the Bloc Québécois. Honestly, anyone in QS or, you know, who wants Quebec to be a country, they have a clearly defined mission.
They do.
Is it one that I agree with? No, not necessarily. But you know what? I give you props. You have convictions. Like, I feel just the way the politics is structured here, people don't really get into it for fame or for fortune. You don't become a politician to be rich. I mean, some people do, but not here. Mm-mm. It's not the type of, it's not like, you know.
It's not the States. It's not money.
It's regulated. Like, listen, like, you're not going to receive like a $200 million pay package by like a lobby.
From who?
From who? Like here, like, you know, campaigns are really regulated. How much money you can receive from people. Lobbying is really regulated. Although there are like, you know, discrepancy when people make the jump from, you know, like public. So like being in the government to private, like, yeah, sure. But I think just the way the government is structured here, it encourages you to go into it with like a mission.
Yeah, because you're actually here for change, not just for the fame of being a politician.
Yeah, because like, no offense, who here gets famous off of being a politician?
Trudeau.
But here's the thing, though. He kind of...
I mean...
I think like his mission was more so to like continue his father's legacy.
Exactly. I think that's what it is.
And like, is it a mission that I agree with? Not really, but I mean like...
I don't think that he has any like drastic
I will say his first mandat, he did have a plan. That's why a lot of people voted for him. They wanted electoral reform. They wanted marijuana to be legalized. They wanted...
That's how you get popular. You legalize marijuana.
Yeah, but, you know, he had, like, all these things. Second go around, it was a lot more vague. And I say this as someone who, like, actually... I didn't vote for him, but, you know, as someone who, you know, could vote that election. Mm-hmm. Could I vote that election? We were too young. The election after that.
Yeah.
That one was really pointless. Anyways, that is to say, Manon Massé, she's really great. She's really inspiring. I admire her for knowing when it's her time to leave. I think she did an amazing job with what she was given.
Yeah, she did.
And she got to see her party grow. I think that's... Because, you know, it says here, like, she started in 2006. And she stayed there. And she was there for like all the 6 years it took for her party and for her to enter the National Assembly.
Mm-hmm. She was present. Which
she was
good.
Present because yeah. I remember when Quebec Solidaire used to be like kind of like a joke, you know?
Yes, definitely. I mean, nowadays we kind of take them seriously, right?
We do take them seriously. They're like almost the second or third most important party. Like, they're really important. They represent a subsection of people who...
Especially, like, for the younger community. Like,
yeah, people on the left who kind of feel like, you know, the Liberal Party is a bit too, you know, conservative or it's not progressive enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I really admire her. I think she brought along a lot of change, and I think she's really inspiring, especially for women trying to get into politics or, you know, LGBTQ plus people trying to get into politics.
Yeah.
I wish good luck to the person who's going to replace her, because those are big shoes to fill. She's still going to be in the National Assembly. You're probably just like not going to hear from her as much, but you know, she's been great. Mm-hmm. I know she's not listening to this, but you know,
who knows,
but she's done a great job. So, moving on. That was quite lengthy. Okay, this is a story that like hits home because my mom is a nurse.
Okay.
Nearly half of Quebec nursing students fail controversial licensing exam again. This is actually the one with the line that was very like cheeky. The article, which is from CBC, says nursing students who took Quebec's licensing exam in March were about as successful as they were last September, which is to say, not very.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So So just over half of the nurses, so 53.3% who took the exam for the first time this spring pass. A success rate is similar to that of last fall, which is 51.4%. The new results come in the wake of a damning report from Quebec's Commissioner of Professions calling last fall's exam flawed. Nursing students told CBC that the exam, which is mandatory to obtain a nursing license in Quebec, did not reflect what they had been studying in school.
Mm-hmm.
So I have three friends in nursing.
Hmm.
They usually say that like the exam is really hard, especially the first part of the exam, from what I heard, is like really hard because it's very disconnected from what you learn.
Well, maybe... You know, like, you learn theory and then you go through stage. And through stage, theory and stage is really not alike, like, at all. I can speak from experience, right? And then you get to the exam, which is only theory. But you remember stuff from stage and you're, like, conflicted. Which answer is the most right? It's not like you're going to have those type of questions where it's wrong, right? But it's like, no, this is not how it goes. It's going to be, like, right. But which one is most right?
Yeah.
It can be really confusing.
Yeah.
But then again, I have to admit, it's a little scary knowing that a lot of people fail the exam.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we do depend on nurses.
And there's consistently nursing shortages. That's okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, nurses do everything. Like, if you've ever been in a hospital, nurses take you in, they check you out, they give you your drugs, your medication, your vaccines, they put the catheters, they remove everything, they clean you.
Check up on you, they talk to your family.
Everything.
They do the paperwork.
Everything. They're practically mini doctors.
Yeah.
But, like, overworked and underpaid and very, very, very tired. But I couldn't really talk about... I don't know how the exam is, right? I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah.
I don't know how the exam is planned out, if the nurses are actually ready for the exam, right?
Yeah.
Are they coming out of theory or are they coming out of stage? It's confusing. Like, you should ask a nurse how it is and why it was so complicated for her.
Yeah.
Or him.
Yeah. I have a friend, the way the exam is structured, you can do it the exam three times,
mm-hmm.
but if you fail it on the third time, you have to redo your entire degree.
Mm.
And I have a friend, I won't name her because, like, listen, this, I mean, yeah, I have a friend. She did the exam twice, and now she's like, listen, I think I'm going to do something else because if I, like, fail the exam, I have to redo this all over again.
Like, it doesn't mean they're not competent.
Yeah,
nurses,
and she's
right?
Like, it was already, like, kind of a struggle for me to, like, you know, go through the program because, like, it's really demanding.
Definitely.
And go through the stage, and I'm not sure I want to do that all over again, so I might as well just, like, study something else. And that really sucks because there are a lot of young women and men who want to get into nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine if, like, that exam is, like, the one barrier keeping them from achieving that, especially, again, since we have, like, a nursing shortage and we keep trying to get people to go into nursing. And it really sucks for them, honestly. I feel like any exam where, like, 50% of people fail...
The exam is flawed.
The exam is
wrong.
Flawed.
Exam.
Yeah. And that should raise alarm bells.
Definitely. Now, I don't know what type of questions they're asking.
Yeah.
Right? But no, it's not normal.
It's not normal.
For that many people who are quite competent, I'm sure they're actually good at it, right? They've been studying this for 3 years. They know what they're doing. And you're telling me that because I didn't pass this exam that all of a sudden that I can't continue, like at the third time, well, I just need to restart my 3 years. It's not fair.
Yeah.
It's really not fair.
Yeah. Because any other profession, say this was the bar exam.
Mm-hmm.
If 50% of like law students fail the bar exam, there's a problem with the exam.
There's a problem with the exam.
You're not going to convince me that 50, like in say thousands of people who have went to law school, which is really hard to get to law school, who have gotten the degree, which again, you have to get the degree to even go to bar school.
Yeah.
And then they go to bar school and then they fail, like 50% of people fail. Like, you're not going to convince me that like those 50% were just didn't study enough or they were like too stupid. No, there's a problem with the, there's a fundamental problem with the exam. And also in the article, they said that the passing grade had been raised without justification.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's not fair.
That's not fair.
Yeah, that's definitely not fair.
Yeah, I remember my dad told me that when he also had to pass an exam to get his brevet,
mm-hmm.
which is like the paper you need to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He said that I think the passing rate, you had to have like 75%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the French exam, right?
Yeah, no, basically he said that there were four or three sections, I don't remember, but you have to get 75 in each of the sections to pass.
Yeah.
So say you get like 90, 85, 74,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter that you got 74, like you failed the exam.
Oh, wow.
So I imagine if it's structured that way.
I can tell you.
Yeah. And I understand there needs to be a cutoff, but I feel like there could be some wiggle room, you know?
I mean, leg room.
Wiggle room.
Well, wiggle room is even that it's, you know, they're taking care of our lives, right?
Yeah.
It's like a matter of life or death. It's not like a secretary job or like administration. It's not like a typing down stuff. They're actually administrating you drugs and making sure that your blood pressure is okay.
Yeah.
And making sure like they're not mixing medication. So
yeah.
The wiggle room can be, it can be present, but like, let's be aware of the fact that their nurses, like our lives are legit in their hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. But you know, it's like, you know how, you know, when we went to Regina, if you got like, say the passing grade is like is a 60, if you get like 59.3,
you failed, right?
You failed. It's it sucks, but you know, I get it. Hopefully there's new developments. Hopefully they get like a commission to reform the exam.
Definitely.
Or to talk to people to see what's wrong. Cause I remember my friends really stressing over it. So we're going to take a really short musical break.
Yeah, sure.
So this is Why Do You Run by Planet Giza.
Yeah. Why do you run when it don't work your way? Why do you run when it don't work your way? Why do you run when it don't work your way? Why do you run when it don't work your way?
And that was Why Do You Run by Planet Giza. You are listening to Off the Hour Friday. I got it right. I'm your host, Carla, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3. So usually I like to end these shows with a bit of like a pop culture news because I love pop culture and I like to leave it at the end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this headline is, everything to know about the Bachelor Senior spinoff, The Golden Bachelor. I wanted to talk about this because in a Voices of Montreal episode, we talked about how all three of us, you know, maybe not you, but, you know, the co-host who I usually do it, we all loved reality TV. And I love the idea of doing a Golden Bachelor. So basically, they're doing a spinoff of The Bachelor where you're going to have seniors, I think 60 and up, who are going to be basically doing The Bachelor. And I personally love it.
I think it's going to be adorable.
Yeah.
Just simply adorable.
Yeah. And I love the fact that, like, I mean, there's many things I love about it. Number one, a complaint that people have about The Bachelor is that people go on it to be famous. I feel like if you're 60 plus, you're not really going on it to be famous. I mean, I think some people might, but I think most of them want to have, like, the experience, you know, have fun. Exactly. Some people might actually be looking for, I feel like you're going to have a lot less of the, oh, she's here for clout, you know? And number two, I think I love the fact that it shows that at any age you can find love and you are worthy of love.
Definitely. I mean, like, is it real love or, like, reality TV love?
It's reality TV love. But I think what I really like about it is the fact that, like, I think a lot of people, they tend to think that, like, your love life ends at 30 after you get married.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But, like, things happen. You get divorced. Your spouse dies. Maybe you just didn't find the right person. There are people who are single in their 60s. And I feel like those people also deserve to be represented on TV.
I think that is going to be very eye-opening to how people perceive love and how they want their lives to be, right?
Yeah.
Like, they can reflect on those people and see, like, they're still falling in love with so many other people. And, like, they're competing for love, right? Isn't that The Bachelor?
They're competing for a man
or a woman.
Yeah.
So it's not the same. Like, they're maybe, like, not as physically fit or, like, very handsome or very beautiful.
Yeah.
But they're still, they're competing for someone.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see how different the conversations are going to be.
Oh, my God. They're going to bring back gentlemen and charisma and charm is going to be different.
Yeah, and I feel like the conversation is going to just going to be so different because at 60 you have so much life experience, you know.
Exactly.
You may have kids, grandkids, you may have gone through a divorce, you may have traveled the world, you may have had all these different careers. And I love old people. I don't know, there's something like my neighbors are really elderly and they're like my grandparents.
Yeah.
And I love, like, you just hanging out at their house. They're from Italy, and so the idea that, like, it's kind of like watching them go on The Bachelor, there's something really fun about it.
I think it's going to be very cute, honestly. Yeah. I think it's going to be like a heartwarming show instead of like a reality TV show.
Yeah, and there might be drama. So I want to know what the senior people drama look like. Like,
what does it look like?
Honestly? I don't know. We'll see. Honestly, I can't wait. It's in production now, so we don't know when it's going to come out. But I will be watching it with wine in my hand. First edition, I will be there. So that was, that was Off the Hour Friday. I was your host, Carla Zier. We're going to play you out with Avant Elle by Alyosha Schneider.
Rien à espérer de moi. Passe ton chemin, t'arrête pas. Non, rien à espérer de moi. Tout me glisse entre les doigts. Le bonheur, je suis arrivé à sa porte. J'ai pas osé, non, j'ai pas osé. Le bonheur, je suis arrivé à sa porte. J'ai pas osé. Non, j'ai jamais eu peur de personne. Avant elle, avant elle. Non, j'ai jamais eu peur de personne. J'ai jamais eu peur de personne. J'ai pas osé. Non, j'ai jamais.
abandonne avant et avant et. Non, j'ai jamais eu peur de personne. Au monde, quand ceux qu'on aime nous aiment plus. Est-ce qu'il y a une chose plus triste au monde, quand ceux qu'on aime nous aiment plus?